You know, it's really interesting. I was praying that God would give me an example here from the Word on what we're going to talk about tonight, target groups, targeting evangelism, target evangelism, and target outreach. And I've been reading through the book of Luke, and so this is the parallel passage to the passage I read in the book of Luke. And in Mark chapter 5, it says, "They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart, and he broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones." Thank you, Jeff. "When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, 'What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me.' For Jesus has said to him, 'Come out of this man, you evil spirit.' Then Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' 'My name is Legion,' he replied, 'for we are many.' And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, 'Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them.' He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went to the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed of the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, 'Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you.' So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed." I was really struck by this as I was reading through this by a couple of things. This is one of the only instances that I know of that Jesus did an incredible miracle, and instead of people turning out with more sick people for Jesus to heal, they asked him to leave. They pleaded with him, "Get out. Get out of here." And I thought, man, this is really incredible. I mean, Jesus has just done an awesome miracle. Jesus has just done an incredible thing. He has made this guy, I mean, this guy's been this way all his life. All of his life, he's been demon-possessed, and chains haven't been able to bind him, and all the people in the region know it, you know. You'd think they'd have a little sympathy for this guy. I was also struck, if you can call it this, although, please, if you're not of the same opinion, this is just an opinion, at the mercy that Jesus had at this time on the demons. Because they knew what they deserved. They knew that a time was coming Jesus would surely torture them for all eternity in hell. And Jesus didn't send them there, he sent them into the pigs. He gave them even their request. I was pretty blown away by that. But what I was more blown away by was this. Jesus left this man to do what he couldn't do. Jesus left this man to do what he knew he was unable to do. And what was that? Reach the people at Decapolis. They didn't ask the demon-possessed man to leave. They welcomed him with open arms, and they were all amazed at what God had done. But here Jesus himself, the very one who had done the miracle, they wouldn't even listen to. They pleaded with him to leave. And I was truly amazed as I thought about this in light of what we've been talking about. There are some situations that you're going to get into that you are the very best person for the relationship. God has got you in situations that are divine appointments that God has given you that you are going to be the best individual to reach that person. In fact, you might have, God might be able to work better through you than through His own Son. Now I want you to think about that for a minute. I'm not being sacrilegious. I'm not being blasphemous. I'm talking about something here Jesus said himself. This man, you know, I don't know of one disciple or apostle who begged Jesus to follow him. I don't know of one who said, Jesus, let me follow you. Jesus, let me go with you. And here's a man who pleaded with Jesus to let him follow him. And Jesus said, no. No. You stay here and have an impact on your family and friends. Look at Luke chapter 8 and verse 26. Not verse 26, I'm sorry, about verse 38. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away saying, return home and tell how much God has done for you. So the man went away and told all over town how much Jesus had done for him. You know, I mean, what a testimony this guy had. I mean, you know, all these people knew him. Many, many people, you know, they'd seen him for years. And see, he had the opportunity Jesus didn't. Do you remember one day Jesus is walking along and there's this blind man. And the disciples said, Lord, who sinned? Him or his parents that he is blind? Remember that? How many of you remember that? Okay. And Jesus' response was, neither. Neither. People don't go blind because they sin. But this has happened for the glory of God. Remember that? That's the exact words. But this has happened for the glory of God. God, this situation was ordained. It was set up by God. He knew this guy was demon-possessed. And he comes along and he rebukes the devil. And he knows he wouldn't have the impact. He set it up for this man to reach out to the people that were around him. Now, I believe that's the situation you and I are in today. We're Jesus' legs, his arms, his hands, his feet. We're his body. The Bible makes that explicitly clear that we are the bride of Christ, that we are his hands and his feet, that we are his body. When one suffers, we all suffer. When one prospers, we all prosper. I don't know how he could be more clear. And that individually, we have personal relationships with him. And that individually, we can have the potential of having a myriad of relationships. Jesus wants to bridge the gap with the lost through you. I want you to turn to something also very interesting that the Lord showed me. Let me just read this in case I missed something here I wrote down. Here we see people that when Jesus did a great miracle, instead of being excited about it, they were very afraid and they asked him to leave. Jesus did what they asked him. But when the man who was healed asked to go with him, Jesus said no. Why? Because Jesus knew that this man would have an impact on these people that he wouldn't. So he told him to go back and tell his friends what wonderful things God had done for him. I'd like you to look at Matthew chapter 10. In verse 40. Yeah. This really struck me. First turn to John. I'm sorry, John 15. I do that a lot. It's becoming a habit, I think. I'm sorry. Sometimes you get in a rut. John chapter 15 and verse 18. It says, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember the words, I spoke to you, no servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obey my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. Okay, this is a very interesting. I want you to get a hold of this principle tonight. Why does the world hate you? Because they hate God. But in verse Matthew chapter 10 and verse 40, he says, he who receives you receives me. And he who receives me receives the one who sent me. Here's the principle. If a person likes you, if you can cultivate a friendship with a person who is lost, and they begin socially to respond to you, I guarantee you it will be much easier for them to respond to God. You are the bridge to God. If they receive you, the Bible in fact says if they receive you, they will receive me. I'm telling you, there's a statistic show that 86% of the time, that's exactly the case. You become their friend, you become involved, and they receive Christ. So what we want to do Like I've been sharing all these last 3 weeks, if you've not gotten the tapes, by the way, please get them. You'll need to hear all the message that we've given on this so they all tie together. The point is that God is in you reconciling the world to Himself now. See? Jesus said, remember, it is better that I go so that I can send the Counselor and He'll live in you. Now God is at home in you all. And God is using you as ambassadors. So, the whole reason, the whole purpose of everything I've shared is so that the only possible obstacle between you and an unbeliever has to be the cross of Christ. If they're going to stumble, brother and sister, let's let them stumble over the cross and not over the fact that we think 501 blues are from the devil. I'm just using that as an absurd analogy. Okay? Let's let them stumble over that which would really be right for them to stumble over. And not something that, or something else that it would obviously be clearly sin. You know? That's not what I'm advocating here. And so what I wanted to touch on a little bit with you tonight is target groups. Getting involved in target groups. And you'll understand how you can do this when I explain to you what we're going to be doing in the church. That's one of the things we need to cover tonight, is the new church in Minneapolis. Okay, these exciting new plans that you've all been waiting to hear. Alright? First of all, I want you to write these things down, because I know you're not all going to remember these things. Alright, it's just important you write them all down. A target group is this. First of all, you've got your neighborhood. Okay? Your neighborhood. When was the last time you went over and helped your neighbor rake his leaves? When was the last time you invited your neighbor to go to, you know, the zoo, to a Twins game? When was the last time you invited your neighbor to just go with you and him and your family down to the beach? Not to a church function, but to the beach. Or your workmates. That's your second target group. Your workmates, people that you work with. When was the last time? I mean, you had any time besides trying to invite your lost friend at work to Sunday morning church or the life group that you're involved in. I mean, when was the last time, you know, you went water skiing with them? When was the last time you went tubing down the Apple River? When was the last time you went and saw a movie with them? For many of us, it would just simply be zero. This has never happened. And I understand why. Many of you don't have the time. And that's one of the things we can talk about tonight. So those are two groups, your neighborhood, your workmates. Now I want to talk about some other target groups. Aerobic clubs, dance clubs, bowling clubs, rodeo clubs, fishing clubs, gardening clubs, bowling teams. Did I say bowling teams? Softball teams, knitting crews, whatever. I don't know. Sewing clubs. Sewing bees, that's it. Sewing bees. I could name a bunch of others. Some of you, I think you're getting the point of what I'm talking about. We could probably easily come up with a list of 100 athletic clubs, USA, swim and fitness. Okay? We would like to encourage you to get involved in those things. All right? And you're going to wonder how. Well, I'm coming to that. Just believe me, I wouldn't tell you to do that if you weren't going to have the time. Okay? And obviously, you've got to have the money for some of those things. But with most of us, the problem is we don't have the time. I think most of you have the desire, and I sure hope that most of you, after you've heard the tapes, understand the mandate that we have from God to do so, and the clear permission and liberty from God to do so. You could get involved in a music club. You could get involved in choir. You can get involved in drama. I mean, there's all kinds of things out there to get involved. Now, some of you may be busy enough in your neighborhood and at work that you won't need to, but I don't know if you will. Also, you'd want to target groups that are similar in age, that have similar interests. What you want to do is make a list of your interests, your personal interests. Okay? Not all of us here are, you know, athletic people. We have other interests. Make a list of your interests and then find groups where there's computer clubs, all right? I think that'd be a real good thing for some of you to get involved in. I really mean that. We've got a brother back in Ames who's the president of the Apple Macintosh Club in Ames, Iowa. And now he's going into computer consulting, and he's going to have some tremendous opportunities. Some of you are some of the sharpest people in your field. And God could really use you in those kind of situations. So, anyway, I just want to underscore, we're going to move on. I just want to underscore Mark and Luke and Matthew 10:40 and John 15. Really ponder those things. Those are very revolutionary, important principles to think about, you know, and to ponder on. It's really exciting to see that you begin to meet the lost where they're at instead of demanding them to be where you're at or where you would like them to be. You know, let me say, I believe we have more of a problem with this than we imagine. And I'll try to illustrate with you a point. You know, have you ever gotten frustrated with a new Christian? I mean, a new Christian. You want to give him assurance. You want to teach him to have quiet times. You want to teach him to get in the Word. So what do? You tell him to come over to your house 6 o'clock in the morning, 2 mornings a week. He's never gotten up before 8 o'clock in his life. But man needs to be in the Word. And God needs to get the Word into him. See? So you got to plug into this, brother. And this young baby, all he wants to do is cry, suck his thumb, and eat, and play games. And all you want to do is treat him like an adult Christian. Now, I want you to understand something. Paul in the book of Thessalonians makes it very clear. You go home and read this yourself, okay? Paul is only with the Thessalonians, in my opinion, 3 weeks. There is a possibility he was there as long as 3 months. He says, you became very dear to us that we not only imparted our own lives, but or the gospel, but our own lives as well. And we were with you like a mother tenderly nursing her children. Now, I'm just going to give you all a little insight into Paul's discipling program. He nursed his babies when they cried and wanted to be nursed. He didn't say, all right, kid, you're going to be up at midnight, then you're going to be up at 6, and then you're going to be up at 10, and then you're going to be up at 12, and then we're going to feed you at 6. You do not do that to a newborn baby. You live on their schedule. And you ask any parent, you don't demand that baby to do what you want them to do. You meet that baby where they're at. And you'll never find one of my kids deserting me. Because I practice that with my children. And I meet my children where they're at. And their allegiance and loyalty and love is to me. And you find any father or mother who put a demand in the respect I'm talking about on their child, says, you do this, you'll do this, and you'll be 12 before when you're 6, and you'll act 15 when you're 3, then inevitably they've got a rotten, wretched relationship with their child. Inevitably. Now this was Paul's discipleship program, period. This is the way he built men and women. He lived his whole life. He said, I'll gladly spend and be spent for you. Man, I'm up sometimes till midnight. I have people call me at 1. You would not believe the schedule I have just in the next 2 days. Just in the next 3 days. I've got a meeting after this. And then tomorrow morning I have to get up. My wife's got to be somewhere. And I've got to prepare for Sunday and for a wedding I'm giving. And it's 6 o'clock. And then tomorrow night my 7 brothers and sisters are coming to stay overnight. The next morning my wife has the wives' breakfast while I'm watching the kids getting ready for the wedding I'm singing at 2 o'clock. At 4:45 I'm picking up Brent at the airport. And then after that my other brother's coming. At 11 I'm picking my mom up from the airport. And Sunday morning's church. And then there's all kinds of things going on Sunday afternoon. Our life is to be lived, period, for other people. And we fit into their life. And as you fit into their life, they will begin to reciprocate. And they'll begin to fit into your life. You give. Paul said, I'll gladly spend. If my life is being poured out as a drink offering, what is that to me? He said, what is that to me? This was the mothering mentality of the Apostle Paul. And some of the mothers we have in our fellowship are among the most godly women in the world. For that very reason. They are at the dictates and the beck and call of that little baby. And I want to tell you, you look around some of these mothers in here, and they don't let you know it, but they're shot out of their gourd. My wife, the first year, all 3 of my kids were born, never slept more than 3 hours straight for a solid year. And seldom did she ever get more than 7 hours total of sleep in a day's time. And she was just shot all the time. And you know, Rox and Charlie can attest to that. And Gail and Tony and some of you others with children. I mean, that's life. Well, we do it because, you know, what choice do we have? But you see, Paul did it willingly with mature, grown-up people who became brand new babies in the Lord. And he gave, and he lived to their desires and helped them and build them, and he gave them his life. He gave them his life. And Paul was in a unique situation before many churches were set up. Paul literally did work night and day so as not to be a burden to any of these new baby believers. It wasn't like there was already churches. He went to Thessalonica, and that's exactly the standard he set. He said, I worked night, and then I worked all day. And when Paul said that, he meant that. He says, I've gone through many sleepless nights, hungry, naked, cold, and on and on. I'm hated. I'm called an imposter. I'm called this. And I count it a privilege when I can get in a situation and have the same things happen to me. I want to tell you something, brother and sister. This is why. You want to be effective in evangelism? You want to reach people for Jesus Christ? You want to be effective men and women, disciple maker? Just live like Paul lived. That's all there is to it. That is all there is to it. Love is the program. Knowledge puffs up. Love edifies. And you start letting people walk on you. You start letting people take advantage of your time and of your schedule. And you'll have friends and you'll win men and women for Christ. And you will win young Christians. And you'll have them wanting to get involved in what you're involved in. But many of us are unwilling to go meet them where they're at. You see? We forget what it was like when we were a new Christian. I have to constantly remind that to myself as a parent. What I was doing at five. What is a five-year-old's interest? I mean, I don't groove on Legos. I'll admit that to you. I never was one of those fidgety little guys that liked Legos, Lincoln Logs, and Erector Sets. My brothers were into that. They could sit for hours and build these humongous Erector Set jobbies with motors, and they'd shoot mice up in the air with rockets, and then they'd come down, you know, with parachutes. I mean, they'd never harm them or kill them. They'd always live. I was in. I mean, that's baby stuff, you know. I couldn't stand that stuff. Now I got a son. He likes Legos. Now I got a daughter. So they like to play house. Well, daddy's got more important things to do. And we're going to talk about this, son. You want to be a great daddy, you better start acting like a five-year-old. You better start acting like a six-year-old. You better be willing to put on a little girl's hat once in a while and put a purse on and play mom and daddy. Or you're going to lose your kids. And if you won't do it with your kids, you won't do it with adults. And if you don't adopt that mentality, this is the mentality that Jesus had. It's the mentality Paul had. I mean, he says to himself, I'm a nursing mother. I don't know if I'd like to have that people think of me like that, but, you know, that's what Paul said. You know, I'm like a nursing mother, tenderly and affectionately among you. And I'm also like a father, and urging you and firm and gently firm with you. And then there's times Paul had to be very firm like we were tonight. That's all what it means to be a parent. So I guess you call this a lot of things. You can call this spiritual parenting. But this is what Paul would do. So if you understand that, if you grasp that, if you don't meditate on it, you need to think about it. This will make you a dynamo in reaching people for Christ, with or without the gift. We all have the Spirit, and we all have the power of love and self-discipline and the Spirit of power. Some of us are going to obviously be more gifted and going to be more effective in different things. Don't ever worry about that. God is not limited. So, anyway, enough said on that. I want to share with you what we're going to be doing as far as our schedule goes. We've realized that ever since Brent and I have gotten up here, Brent got up here first, then I got up here, that you all live a very busy life. The average husband, I think, up here works approximately 50 hours a week and has about 8 hours a week traveling time. So we're almost, you know, at 60 hours a week just involved in work. And I mean, a lot of you single guys and girls are the same way. I don't mean to differentiate. I'm just saying that, lumping everyone together. Some is less and some is more. So we realize that, you know, sometimes, you know, and I know brothers, some brothers that are getting home at 8 and 9 o'clock almost every night. And some have families and some don't. And they're just busy. I know one brother that works all day and then's on call whenever they want him. And sometimes he's got to go in at 1:30 in the morning and work spent all through the day. That's his job. You know, we all have jobs. So, and then in keeping with what we've been talking about in the area of servant evangelism, we've realized that we've had a meeting on Thursday night, and I wouldn't go back and change that because I believe God wanted us to do that. I believe God wanted us to be equipping us and building us up for the work of service. So that's why we've done it. And we've had the PGTs and we've had the life group. And I know John, for example, on Monday night goes out for outreach. And Tuesday night has outreach. And Wednesday night works. On Thursday night she's got this meeting. On Friday night she's got a team meeting. And Saturday she tries to recuperate from the week. And many of you are in that same situation. And you're going, well, gee whiz, Mark, you know, this is all great. How can I do it? Well, here's how. From now on, not now to eternity, we're always going to reevaluate and reflect, but for this time, you will be free on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. There will be no meetings on any of those nights. There will be no more PGT, and there will be the Sunday morning meeting, and then we will have what we're going to call cell groups on Sunday night. Okay? The body grows, remember this, please remember this from the night. The body grows through the division of cells. The human body grows, all of you that were in any biology or any kind of physiology know that the body grows through the division of cells. If we are not dividing, if there's not growth within the cell so that it divides and divides and divides, there's no growth. All right? The reason that we're driving the PGT is because we feel like there's some that are doing, that have done real well, but there's others that have not. We feel like it's time for something fresh, something new. A lot of people's attitudes I've thought to are, well, you know, it's another meeting. You're supposed to come and you check up on each other. You're supposed to have your two verses memorized. And I think people are getting a little bit tired of that. I don't think it's meeting the purpose that we originally intended. So that's fine. We're never going to beat a dead horse. We'll allow God to direct us. Now, some of your PGTs have not been that way at all. Some of your PGTs have been exactly what we are designing the cell group to be. And we'll get to that. Okay? Secondly, though, we realize that your PGT usually took up a whole evening in the night. Some of it didn't. You had it with your breaking of bread or whatever. But we'd like to free up that time so that you really do have time, legitimate time, to get involved with the people you'd like to win to Christ. Now, in place of Thursday night, the Thursday night meeting, we'd like to try something really, I'm really excited about. I think it could really be a lot of fun and really be exciting. We're going to try a once a month. Hey, come on. Show a little kindness. That's right, my trademark. Oh, don't get me started. A once-a-month celebration. It's going to be called a celebration. It will be tentatively. The first one will not be. And the second one will not be. Because, okay. But all the rest, Lord willing, will be on the first Saturday of every month. And they'll start at 10 o'clock in the morning. And we'll get together at 10 o'clock, and from approximately 10 to noon, we're just going to sing. Sing hymns. We're going to sing till we can sing no more. And we're going to praise the Lord and be together and just sing. And then at noon, we're going to have a giant potluck. And then, this is a maybe. We have to see if we can get this worked out at Regina. Each cell group, which I'm getting to, will be their own little volleyball team. And we're thinking about having an inter-church volleyball competition. So you can invite new people too and really get in some competitive spirit. So let's say from noon to one, we might eat. And I realize, you see, the eating might be the great equalizer. We'll all be playing on a full belly. Right. Okay? And then let's say from 1 to 2. Now, we're not going to be this regimented. I don't like regimentation myself. I mean, it's good, but I mean, obviously we're not going to be able to do everything just perfect. Then what we'll do is we'll have I don't know if everyone will play every Saturday. You know, we'll have pairs and we'll have someone who's like, you know, a Jeff Hader or somebody who's really great at drawing out all that kind of stuff, you know. You'll have names for your teams, and we'll have this competition. So we'll have to limit the games like whatever they did when you were intramurals in college. What was it, 15 minutes, 20-minute games? And we'll probably only be able to handle, you'll be involved in maybe one on each Saturday. So, again, this will be certainly a family situation because you're going to sweat. Feel free to wear sweat clothes or whatever. We're not going to have everybody hit the showers after this, by the way. So, you know, I mean, it's just going to be one big happy picnic, kind of. And then after that, we'll meet together, and from like, let's say, 2 to 5:30. That's 2:30 to 5:30, or 2 to 5:30. We'll have teaching. And we'll be building this up all during the month. This will be, number one, we think that a lot more of you will be able to come. How many of you just hearing it right now really think it would be really the exciting thing to try? Get your hand up real high. Okay, great. For those of you that are married, we've got solutions for the child situation. First of all, remember this in your mind, it's only once a month. I've been to all-day family reunions, and the kids just have to take a little bit of extra grace that day. Secondly, because it'll be an only once a month thing, we feel like a lot of us will be able to bring sleeping bags and put them in like a particular room, and if a child, most mothers are going to have to rock their child to sleep, they can take them in there and lay them down, and we'll have someone in there, we'll rotate with the mothers or whatever, so someone's in there watching them. We might even, for some of the older kids that attention spans not quite as long, Ron Max has a wonderful supply of videos, that Walt Disney videos and things, and so we might have the church VCR there for some of the other kids that get a little strung out. And then, understand this, that no one is required to be there for the whole day. If you don't want to come in the morning, you come in the afternoon. If you don't want to come in the afternoon, you come in the morning. That's certainly optional. You know, we're not going to have sign-up sheets for any of this. But I think that we can build this thing, and we'll be able to share with you ahead of time, Lord willing, what we're going to share on and build that up. And I think we'll be able to get a lot of people there besides ourselves, a lot of new people that have been coming on Sunday. Now, maybe not right away. But I think also some of you that are building relationships with unbelievers would get them maybe to come to something like that in time, or maybe for the volleyball portion, the lunch and the volleyball portion, just tell them to come at noon and maybe for some of the teaching. That'll be up to you, okay? So we'll be doing that on a once-a-month basis. Now, the first one that we're going to do is September 19th, okay? I'm sorry. There's conflict. But that's the best I can do. September 19th, Saturday, September 19th, starting at 10 o'clock. And this will all tentatively be at Regina. Okay? Next Thursday night, we will have no meeting. There will be no church meeting next Thursday night. We're going to be starting implementing these things almost as soon as possible, like tonight. Some of them we won't be able to, but this particular thing we will. There's no meeting next Thursday night. We will have the prayer meeting next Friday night. Okay? So next Friday night, starting at 7:30 on the 28th, please write this down. We'll have a prayer meeting. And we'll be praying over a lot of these things. Here. Yes, here at Emmanuel Baptist. Okay? Then, the next one after that will have to be October 10th. It would have been October 3rd, but it'll have to be October 10th. We'll be coming out, Lord willing, in the newsletter with a schedule for all this. We may even on December 5th, get together and plan a major informal church Christmas party, you know, and just have the whole fixings go a little overboard. I mean, we want to make this like a big family and have a really good time to spend the time together that we like to interact, sing, play, and get into the Word of God together. I think God could really use this. Then, I'd like to encourage you in this. Some people have wondered, well, there's a trade-off because now we spend 4 nights a week and about, well, when I'm doing this lately, it's been an hour and a half. And I'm sorry about that, but we just had to get this covered. But I'm going to make it all up to you starting tonight because you're free as a bird. You know, okay? But one of the things I want you to know I've been super, super encouraged by is the usage of the tape library. We're sending out sometime on a regular basis 90 to 100 tapes a week. And I'm just thrilled by that. I just want you to know that. And so the deal, Steve will explain to you, I realize that some of you with your tape situation, well, obviously there won't be a Thursday night teaching to take advantage of. So we'll make that up to you, but please just give us a little grace. He didn't know that was coming when he offered you the deal on the reusable tapes. But this will also give you more time to listen to the tapes you've been wanting to listen to, rather than thinking, oh my goodness, I've got to get the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Which, although I have been super encouraged, my goodness, by I think personally, from what I can ascertain, we're using more tapes in this church than Ames. So, I want you to know, bless your soul! Hallelujah! That is fantastic! And I think personally it's paying off. And I think it will continue to pay off. So, praise God. Now, I want to talk about the celebrations. I mean the cell groups. The cell groups. Our cell groups, some of you I'll be talking to you, some of you will be leading one, and you're not leading one now. And I'm going to be talking to you about that and explaining to you why. We want to have these cell groups at no more than approximately, for couples it'll be 12 people because we want to go with even numbers, man and wife. Now, unless you've got a single parent involved, that's fine. Okay? You singles will probably be around 13, 12 or 13 people involved. We want to maintain the intimacy, first of all. I have never been involved since I've been in the church in 9 years of my life on a team of less than 30 people. Never. Never! And sometimes my team's been 40 to 45 meeting in a home. You try to have intimacy with 40 to 45 people. It just doesn't work. Okay? It's an impossibility. You know? So what we want to do is we want to design, I call it a care and share group. Many of you have shared this with me, and I know many of you feel this way. I've also been involved in these home meetings for a long, long time. And very seldom was I in a home meeting where I knew it would have been appropriate. Now I'm going to, please bear with me here. To cry in the meeting or to ask for personal prayer. Man, my life, things have just been really hard this week. Things with my wife and I are really tough. I need you guys just to pray for us. Or, my mother just went in the hospital and she may not live. Or there's a guy at work, his name's Sam, and I'd really like to ask you all to pray for him. I'd really like to reach him and I'd just like you to pray that he like me. Why? Well, because we got a program to maintain. We got three verses that are supposed to be memorized. We got little cards we're supposed to check up on one another about. And then we've got this little set thing, this program we've got to get through. And by the time it's done, the personalness is gone. Secondly, we've made it the hardest group in the church to get involved in for new people. It ought to be the easiest. The small group ought to be the absolute easiest group to get involved with. All right? It ought to be, actually, if you see a new person at church, you meet them, the first thing you invite them to. I mean, if they want to come, boy, where our church is really at is in the cell groups. And I want you to know, I believe that. We cannot make it in this church without you. We cannot reach this city for Jesus Christ, brother and sister, without the unique gifts and personality and body, the embodiment that God has given you. It's an impossibility. And we want to put you guys into motion. We want to put you in action more than we've ever been before. So, a cell group might be one night, you all go out for yogurt together. Nothing spiritual is done at all. The students have done that. Jane, with her PGT, she airbands. Now, I know it's a little wacky, and you can understand why when it's Jane, But, I'm just teasing. I say that in love. Jane, no, you can't hit me for there. No, that's going to be nice. And then, one night, their home meeting, Mike and Jane's home meeting, and with the students, they went out and played frisbee football. It was like 100 out, and everybody sweat like pigs. Pigs don't sweat. That's a joke. Okay, well, anyway, they all sweat. And then they just sat on a picnic table, got eaten alive by mosquitoes, and prayed a little and shared a little, and that was their time. And everybody had a blast. Then other times, you might sit. First of all, we'll always have a meal with this. Every Sunday night, you will always have a meal. Well, unless you go somewhere else. There can be exceptions. There's liberty in this thing. But on a regular basis, we'd like you to eat. We'd like these all to be on Sunday evening. Or, around 5-ish. Whatever. Okay? We like uniformity as far as that goes, unless there's a real major exception. Because we feel like most people, that they will think of Sunday as being, I could do it on Sunday. Secondly, we'd like it to just be, we want you to have an enjoyable time together. We want you to socialize with one another. We want you to care about one another. Then after you're done eating, you have dessert, then you might just, in a sensitive way, say, well, hey, why don't we all just move in the living room and let's just interact on what's going on in everybody's lives, what's going on at work. I've been having some problems at work, and let's take some time to pray for one another. So you might sit around the room, and I might say, hey, Charlie, how's it been going, man, last week? Of course, when you're starting it off, you can't say these kind of things, but once you get going, see? So I said, well, hey, Charlie, last week, you were telling us about that guy at work. How's it going? That's the leader's job, only to stimulate. And he goes, well, it's going, I don't know, man. Or he might go, well, man, it's really God's making progress. Thanks for your prayer. Things have been going a lot better. And we can all thank the Lord because God answered. We prayed for him. Or Charlie might say, well, you know, I got something to share with the group tonight. You know, most people don't ever feel comfortable to share this with 20 people in the room. But with 12, they might. You say, you know, my wife and I, this has been a rough week for us. Now, most of us would never think of saying that in a group. So leaders, that'll be up to you, and I'm going to talk to you all about that. You're going to have to be honest with your life. Paul shared his life. You know what Paul said? Here's the man who said, God has given us power. He said to the Corinthians, you know, I was among you in much fear and trembling. Fear is sin. I mean, what I'm saying is Paul was real with people. He said, I have opened wide to you, Corinthians. You open wide to me. I have spoken frankly to you. You speak frankly to me. So it always starts with the leader. Okay? So, this could last an hour. Well, it couldn't. It's got to last more than an hour because it takes that long to eat. But it might last 2 hours. We don't want marathon sessions. We don't want to get back to that. Okay? I don't want 3-4 hour meetings. But we want something on the average that can leave on a high point and where people's needs, personal needs are being met. You know? The caring and the sharing that goes on among the body. Individual group, individual talents that will be used. You know, someone might be sharing something happening in their family and my wife might be sitting over there and go, well, you know, boy, you know, my wife and I went through that very same thing about 3 years ago. I was working and we weren't really expecting a baby, and all of a sudden we found out we're going to have a baby. And, oh, man, I didn't know what to do. And it was hard, and I grumbled against the Lord and said, God, why'd you do this here? I was trying to get out of debt, and now look what happened. And I wrestled with that. People get comfort from that, and it meets needs. Instead of your 5 points in a poem, is that why the Bible says you ought to always be encouraged. You see? So all of you have had experiences like that, and you can meet one another's needs. Incidentally, let me say, I know churches that are using this very effectively for bringing unbelievers too. If you've got an unbeliever that's responding to you socially and you're getting to know them, I'd invite them to your cell meeting. I mean, they're not embarrassed to take you to the bar. You know, we talked about that. I wouldn't be embarrassed to bring them around your friends. But I wouldn't make that your number one priority. You get involved in their world. But you'll find out many of them will be amazed at the sharing and the caring that goes on. And I think we shared this. I just want to touch on this in the book of Corinthians so that you can see this. In Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 22, I'll just read it. Tongues then are a sign not for believers, but for unbelievers. Prophecy harvest for unbelievers, not for unbelievers. So if the whole church comes together and everyone speaks in tongues, and some who don't understand or some unbelievers come in, will they not say that you are out of your mind? But if an unbeliever, someone who does not understand, comes in while everybody's prophesying, he will be convinced by all that he is a sinner and will be judged by all, and the secrets of his heart will be laid bare, so he will fall down and worship God, exclaiming, God is really among you. Here's my point I'm trying to make. I believe it was an everyday occurrence in the New Testament that unbelievers were at believers' meetings, in their small home groups, in the churches that met at homes. And prophesying here is talking about the prophesying Paul says to pray for. The ability to comfort and encourage. Remember that? He says, pray especially that you may prophesy. For the one who prophesies speaks to people's comfort and encouragement. You start to speak to people like that, and you'll have friends all over the place. You be Mrs. or Mr. Comfort and Encouragement, and you'll have friends all over the place. See? And the unbeliever will come and go, wow, these people really do care. This isn't religion. This isn't pious hodgepodge. This is love. And he'll recognize that God is among you. So I believe this is even a biblical precedent for what I'm sharing with you. So anyway, this will be our cell groups that will meet on Sunday nights. Some of them will start out small. Some of them will start out with only about 6 people involved. They get up to 12 or 13. And then what we will do is we will never arbitrarily go. We will ask, after Brent and I have taken much time to pray and consulted with the leaders of that cell group, for a couple recruit members, seed members, who are willing to give up what they have there and go out and start another one. And I believe we can fill the city with churches, because that's what the New Testament was. Greet the church that meets in your house. Greet the church that meets in their house. Greet the church that meets in so-and-so's house. And I believe in time we could have thousands, hundreds of cell group churches all throughout this city. And out of one, I was just thinking of today, of three new couples that were there Sunday, I thought, well, man, I'm not going to try. Let's just try and go out. And I was thinking maybe of talking to Ron and Kathy Max and saying, well, Ron and Kathy, why don't you just do cell group and let's just ask those three couples and you start a little cell group and you're home with them. And every new person that comes to church now at the greeting team, what we want to do is get them right involved in a cell group. Right involved in a little home group, maybe the easiest thing in the world to get in. All right, so we'll have the cell groups. And then we will have, we will continue with the wives' breakfast. I think the wives are really getting into that from what I hear. And you'll continue to meet here. I think it will probably be, Lord willing, every third Saturday of the month. Now, it can't be in September because we got our church meeting, so it can be the following Saturday. And you girls will talk about that this Saturday, okay? We'll continue that, and that will be, you can bring new wives to that too. I think the girls will really be able to use that effectively. And then we'll have our prayer meeting, like I've been talking. And then we'll have, sure, a membership day, you know, like the O Day. Anything else we are going to prayerfully choose as we go on. But we do not want to get back to the loaded camel's back again, Lord willing, if we can help it. And any extra meetings that we do add, if we were to have husbands' meetings or like the pastor's class that we're thinking about starting, will probably be in the wee early morning hours so that we don't busy people's evenings. So, anyway, let me see if I had anything else here that I wanted to add. Let me open it up for questions.